Next case is Anderson Maltby Partnership and others, again against the tax commissioner. Mr. Collins?
Yes, Your Honor.
You may proceed.
I am the appellee.
I'm sorry. Mr. Hubbard.
Thank you, Your Honor. And may it please the court.
This is a real property tax exemption case, so it kind of parallels our last discussion. In fact, it dates back to 1851 when the Ohio Constitution was rewritten pursuant to an Ohio Constitutional Convention. And that's when the Uniformity Clause, which was the subject of the last case, was initially adopted in the Constitution. As part of that adoption, the Uniformity Clause provided that all real property shall be valued according by uniform valuation or by value, uniform rule by value. And then it provided an exception for certain exemptions that the legislature could create. And those exemptions were limited to four or five specific categories, one of which was for public schoolhouses, not leased or otherwise. Well, the public schoolhouses was the constitutional classification. And then in 1852, a few months later, the General Assembly created a public schoolhouse exemption. For public schoolhouses, the books and furnishings therein in the land connected therewith, not leased or otherwise used with a view to profit.
Mr. Hubbard, what the phrase, otherwise used with a view to a profit that you've just cited, what word in the statute does that phrase modify?
That modifies all of the previous classifications of property. So it modifies public schoolhouses, which are public buildings. It modifies books and furniture therein, and it modifies the land connected therewith. So there are three forms of property that that relates to. And in fact, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but Minnesota in 1890 had the exact same statutory provision, the exact same constitutional provision, and an owner, a for-profit owner, sought an exemption for property that was leased to a religious seminary. And the court held that the public schoolhouse exemption did not apply because, for two reasons. One, public schoolhouse is public property. That means that the property must be owned by the state or political subdivision. And secondly, it wasn't property, it was property that was leased or otherwise used with a view to profit because there was an owner who was a commercial real estate owner who was leasing the property for profit. So they gave the statute its plain meaning. And in fact, every jurisdiction, and there are many that were struggling in the 1850s and earlier with the system of common schools and free schools, so it's not surprising that the constitutions of all these other states and the statutes have similar language or identical language. Texas is another case. Jurisdiction has the identical language and resolved it the way the commissioner has said it should be resolved.
Counsel.
In other words, giving the plain meaning to the words not leased or otherwise used with a view to profit.
Counsel, since you raised the historical context and the question about lease with a view to profit, was the section lands still in effect in most of Ohio in 1852 at that time to provide the funds for the public school?
Yes, there was a very strong issue. If you look at the pre-1850 Constitution and the statutes, the funding of the public schools was a major focus of the legislature. And so the idea that the funding was coming from the public and that it would be supported by local property taxes, actually, which I know is a subject of some of the school funding cases, but that dates way back. In fact, the property tax was the only tax in town back then. I mean, that's how government was supported. And so it was very important at that time. And I actually looked, and it was fascinating for me as a tax guy, to look at the Constitution. It was enacted in, or adopted in 1851. There was a constitutional convention. And if you look at that, it was very clear that the drafters were very concerned about equal treatment and the exemption should be very narrowly construed. In fact, in a case in 1850 that the Ohio Supreme Court issued, it was Cincinnati College, which predates the new Constitution in 1851, the court said exemptions from real property taxation are in derogation of the rights of all other taxpayers and must be strictly construed. And what we're asking for in this case is to apply the plain meaning of the exemption. Their alternative, even if it were plausible, and we don't think that it is, it clearly is not compelled. Any doubt must be resolved in favor of denying the real property tax exemption claim.
One of your arguments seems to be that this is really for profit, even though they're leasing it to a nonprofit entity.
Absolutely.
But we have a whole line of cases that have resolved that issue otherwise in the church cases, where the church leases the property. The owner that owns the property really has a profit entity, is making a profit, and yet we've ruled that the churches, that they're entitled to the exemption. And I don't.
Actually, Your Honor, if I may, the court hasn't. The board did in a few very recent cases.
There's been no contrary case from this court. None's been appealed.
Well, actually, we do cite in our brief the Taylor versus Anderson case, which is a court of appeals case reported from the 1930s, that was a much closer case than this one. And it was interpreting the exemption you're talking about, the public houses of public worship, not leased or otherwise used with a view to profit. My response is twofold, though. First of all, that's an exemption for houses of public worship. So the word public modifies worship, right? Here, public schoolhouse is a form of public property. And that's what this court held in Watterson versus Halliday. So that's a fundamental distinction. Public property is property that is owned by the state or a political subdivision. So that's point one, that the statute is. But point two is more fundamental.
Clarify. You're saying that public property as to a school is the land it sits on, whereas public property for a church is the church itself?
What I'm saying is that the exemption here we're at issue is for public school houses, which are buildings, it's the books and furniture therein, and it's the land connected therewith. Okay, so it's all forms of property that way, both real and personal. With respect to the public worship exemption, that's for houses of public worship and the land connected therewith, not leased with a view to profit.
Public school property and houses of worship are what you call the distinguishing factors.
That's certainly a distinguishing factor and a fundamental one that makes it different, because this court has said that the public schoolhouse exemption in a case Watterson versus Halliday is a exemption of public property that requires that the property be owned by the state or a political subdivision. That's a fundamental distinction. But the other point.
But is a schoolhouse considered property?
Yes. What the court said in every case throughout that we cite in our briefs, the Gerke case said under the Constitution the term public schoolhouse means public property. It's referring not to the institution, the public schools, as institutions, but as public property. The court in Watterson v. Halliday said not only does the constitutional classification public schoolhouse mean public property, a form of real property, buildings, but that the statutory use of the term public schoolhouse and the public schoolhouse exemption means public, it's a form of property exemption. It means public property. It's not an institutional exemption. But to answer your other point, the cases that were relied on by the Board of Tax Appeals were their own cases, and they were very recent, and they were unaware of a reported Court of Appeals case that presented a much closer question for the court in that it was much harder to grant exemption or to deny the exemption. In that case, a church-owned property leased to another church, and that was denied exemption. Here, there's a for-profit owner who's leasing to a community school.
Is it clear in the record that it is a for-profit owner?
Absolutely, Your Honor. It was stipulated that the exclusive use of the property by the owner is for-profit, and the rents are substantial.
Have we ever held a leased property to a school to be exempt?
None, ever. In other words, if the school is a lessee It never gets exemption, and that's for 158 years. That even predates my personal experience.
Is it the fact that it's a – you sure about that?
Well, thank you.
Is it the fact that it's leased or it's leased with a view to a property?
Well, that's a very interesting question. In the other jurisdictions, it's the fact that it's leased. In other words, leased is enough. But in this case, of course, we have two things.
You have both.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
And if I may, I can reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. A couple of things I'd like to clarify from the arguments raised by opposing counsel. This court has never addressed this specific issue as relates specifically to public schoolhouses. We acknowledge that. However, in a forerunner statute to 570907, this court has specifically addressed this identical situation as regards public universities and colleges. In the Cleveland State case, portable real estate, modular homes, were deemed by this court to be tax exempt, even though they were owned by a for-profit entity and they were leased to a public college and university with a view to a profit. The property itself was owned by a for-profit entity. It was leased by that for-profit entity to a public college and university, and this court in Cleveland State University in 1971 said, that's fine. It is the determination of the use of that property and not the ownership of that property that deems it to be public under 570907. Now, subsequent to that decision, that statute was broken out into four parts. The first part deals with public schoolhouses. The second part deals with houses of public worship, and the fourth part deals with public colleges and universities. The third part's really not relevant to our discussion here. This court, in a very analogous situation, said that's fine. As long as it's being used for a public purpose, this court, for 570907 purposes, does not care about the ownership. It's the use. Now, with other statutes that deal with property tax exemptions, ownership is an issue. And that was in Waterston versus Halliday. That's a 12 case or a 121 case or an 08 case. There are separate real estate exemptions that require public ownership. We don't dispute that. But that's not the case for 570907 for public schoolhouses.
There's a general legislative intent not to tax schools that pervades throughout the statutes. Is there anything we can read into statutory intent or anything that evidences statutory intent in that almost all leases pass the tax through to the lessee, all commercial leases? Very few do not, that I'm aware of at least. And knowing that this is the reality, is there anything in the legislative history or intent that demonstrates that the legislature knew this and that was one of the reasons for the statute?
Well, what the legislative intent in terms of what I could answer that, Your Honor, is that the legislature on the creation of community schools, sometimes referred to as charter schools, determines specifically these are public schools. And having made that determination that these are public schools, I'm confident that the legislature intended that community schools enjoy all the tax exemption rights that public schools had enjoyed, traditional public schools, up until that time. And traditional public schoolhouses are not subject to tax-exempt property that's leased or otherwise used with a profit.
Are traditional public schools leased?
I don't believe that they typically are. I think that's fair to say.
Usually they're owned by the government.
That's right.
Substantially different than what we have here.
Well, I agree in the ownership. That's right, Your Honor. And there is a specific statutory provision that says for property owned by a public entity, by the boards of education, they're tax exempt. We don't disagree with that. However, there is a specific, separate tax exemption for public schoolhouses, the properties, public schoolhouses, that are used for that purpose.
Has this building ever been used for anything other than a schoolhouse?
Oh, certainly it was. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so this is a office building or a commercial building that currently has been converted to be used as a school, and I'm presuming if the charter school went out of business, it could be converted back and used as an office building.
Absolutely. And just to clarify, the school is no longer located at that property.
Right. Okay.
But you're right. And we would expect that after the school vacates that property, if the for-profit lessor, the owner, then leases it to another entity that's not subject to a public schoolhouse exemption or another real property exemption, it should be taxed.
And isn't that substantially different than the provision and the rationale behind the statute to exempt public school property owned by the Board of Education from a privately owned a piece of property that it happens to be used for a school?
I think that's the reason that there are two separate statutes, Your Honor. Let's assume
that accomplish both the same. You're saying they accomplish the same.
They do. They make the property utilized for that public purpose not subject to taxes.
And why would they need two separate statutes to say the same thing?
Because not all properties used for public schoolhouse purposes is owned by a public body. Let's assume that even a traditional
so
public school.
So why didn't they just, you know, all property that's used for a public school is exempt? Why wouldn't that have been the way to characterize the appropriate statute? And because then you're focused on your activity within that building, which is what mm-hmm. you want to focus on. And if the statute and the legislature really meant what you're saying it meant, that no matter who owns the building, no matter whether it's for profit or whether it's owned by the district, as long as teaching goes on inside and it's used as a school, it is tax-free.
And, Your Honor, the statute originally was a singular, holistic statute that was subsequently broken out into separate parts. But let's assume that the statute only addressed traditional public schools, which traditionally own their property. What if there's a fire at that public school? And for a period of time, that public school is displaced, and there's no property available for that traditional public school. They go out and lease property, still conducting the same activities for the public good on leased property from a for-profit owner. Should it be taxed at that point? We say no.
The property owner pays the tax, not the school.
Well, the school pays the tax in this situation because it's subject to a triple net lease, Your Honor, which means that they pay the insurance, the taxes, and the utilities on that. And as you said, I think that's typical in the commercial leases, that the tenant is responsible for that. And again, the distinction, a point that I think bears significant appeal here, is that there is no distinction between the houses of public worship exemption and public schoolhouses.
Right, let me back up to point you just made. Who receives the tax bill under those circumstances?
The tax bill goes to the property owner, Your Honor.
Okay. And however the property owner gathers the money to pay the tax is their business. Not okay. Thank you.
And I think we're talking about ultimate responsibility, but from the standpoint of the state collection, they don't care. The property owner is responsible for that tax. And so again, Justice Kupp, a question you raised in the case prior to the one being argued now is, what are the implications if we rule in favor of appellant's argument? And in this case, that's incredibly significant. Because this statute deals with 570907, dealing with public schoolhouses, dealing with houses of public worship, dealing with public colleges and universities, if you were to rule in favor of appellant's argument in this case, churches that lease property are now going to be subject to taxation, and that's never been the case, and that was never the intent. And if you look at those two separate segments, the subsections of the tax section we're looking at, they're identical. The only difference is the last two provisions of those subsections are switched, but the wording's identical. So the implication of ruling in this case in appellant's favor would be you are overturning years, decades of jurisdictional or of precedential value at the Board of Tax Appeals and at the appellate court level as regards houses of public worship. And we would argue that you're overturning Cleveland State because that determination as regards Cleveland State University comes under the same section, and any distinctions in the subsection language is without a difference.
I take it from your argument that we would be overturning all this precedent means that in current practice, any private owner that leases property for a profit to a tenant who uses it for schooling purposes is now not taxed. Because if we were overturning
right.
the precedent, they would have to be not taxed in order to overturn it, because if they are taxed and we would not rule in your favor, the current practice would simply continue.
Well, the current practice, I think, in terms of houses of public worship, is very clear that they're not taxed. Now, this issue, I will acknowledge, is a fairly recent phenomena due to the proliferation of community schools. Traditionally, public schools own their property, and this hasn't become an issue until this time.
And didn't Cleveland State also, wasn't the property their university owned as well?
It was not, Your Honor. It was located on university property, but it was owned by—
But the university owned the property, as I understood it.
They did not, Your Honor. I believe it was owned by Modulux, which was the company that created the prefabricated housing that, when placed on the realty, was considered to be real property.
And the realty was not owned by the state?
It was not.
University?
It was not. It was owned by Modulux.
And in this case, the Board of Tax Appeals has already ruled in favor of the taxpayer. So this would be a reversal of what the Board of Tax Appeals has done in carrying through the church exemption.
Through the churches and through public schools, both in this case and the Performing Arts School of Metropolitan Toledo.
Is there any case that you're aware of where a community school under the BTA rulings has been required to pay taxes?
To my knowledge, it's only come up twice, Your Honor, both in favor of tax exemption. And that brings up a good point. What is the standard of review here? So long as the BTA's decision is both reasonable and lawful, it should be remaining to stand. And in light of the arguments that have been raised, I think it's highly difficult to determine that their determination was unreasonable. In fact, it's in accord with longstanding precedents, both on, or precedents at least in recent years, on public community schools and public schools in general, and also for houses of public worship. It's very much in accord with this court's ruling in the case of Cleveland State University, and also
Counsel, in the Cleveland State case, those were temporary units that were placed on land that was already owned by the university.
That is correct.
Okay. You just answered Justice Lanziger's question saying that the university did not own that property.
They did not own the property that was subject to the taxation. If
you're talking about the modular units.
Right, that's right.
Okay, but the distinction is they owned the ground that modular unit was placed upon, mm-hmm. and it was a temporary modular unit. And that's very different than what you are interpreting that case to mean here.
I would respectfully disagree, Your Honor. I agree that it was land owned by Cleveland State University, and there was property, the modular homes, that were then placed on that property. The property subject to taxation was the modular homes.
And that was a real estate tax.
That's right, Your Honor, yes.
So that's the confusion.
Yeah, I think that's right.
When you answered her question, you were referring to real estate.
That's modular homes.
She was asking you about the land.
Land. And I apologize if I was confusing. But the property subject to taxation in Cleveland State were those modular homes. And the court determined that even though the property was leased by a for-profit owner with a view to a profit under 570907, that doesn't matter. It's the use to which that property is put that determines the public nature.
Counsel, I'd like to ask you a question, because when we attempt to determine legislative intent, we often look to the policy behind the statute. And I'm having a little difficulty trying to understand the policy behind the statute as you present it to us. This land, which is privately owned,
yes,
could be leased to anybody.
Yes.
In this case, it's leased to an entity that uses it for schooling purposes. And it's leased by the owner for profit. So if it were an office complex or a school building, the owner is still leasing it for the purpose of generating a profit for the owner. Is that
is correct? I think that's fair.
Now, why would it make, in terms of the legislature, a difference whether the private owner that's leasing it for a profit leases it to a entity that's using it for schooling purposes or using it for an apartment complex?
Because it's based on the use of that property for the public good, Your Honor. That's the reason why.
Okay, so if you lease it and make the same profit for an office building, that's not a public good. But if you lease it and make the same profit for an entity that's using it for schooling purposes, that is a public good.
Absolutely.
That's your understanding of what the legislative purpose would be?
Yes, and that's why in the same section of the statute under subsection 2 with houses of public worship, that's the same concept, that they're there for a public good, and it's the intention of this court, as stated in the Carney case in 1959, we're not here to create a tax burden for entities that are governmental in nature, which is a public school, that are doing things for the public good.
But, counsel, the burden for paying that tax is the property owners. Though the school happened in this situation to enter into a lease that requires them to pay the property taxes, the burden for those taxes lies with the owner of this private piece of land. And that's a little different than what Justice Kupp just, you know, asked you about it. And the purpose, you know, the behind exempting land that is public land from taxation, there's a distinction there.
I don't believe that there is. And the reason is, Your Honor, is because the statute talks about the following property shall be exempt from taxation. And it talks about public schoolhouses. This court in Gerke, in determining what makes a schoolhouse a public schoolhouse in terms of the statutory determination, is the use of the property. It's not the ownership. And because houses of public worship, public colleges and universities, public schoolhouses are performing on that property services for the public good, the legislature has determined since the constitutional creation that they shouldn't be taxed for that. And I think
Didn't Gerke, if I remember, was a private school case, not a public school case. And issue was, are you going to extend this exemption to private property, parochial property, et cetera, which is not leased for a profit, is owned by the entity that is the educational institution. And that was what Gerke was all about.
Gerke was a determination of whether a public schoolhouse is entitled to tax exemption. I mean, that's what that case is about. Now, I will openly admit it's a tough case to follow, and we provided in our brief a flow chart that I think outlines the determination of that case fairly well. And what you need to keep in mind is there's first a determination of, is it constitutionally permissible to exempt this property? And under the constitutional permissibility avenue, the court determined public schoolhouses have to be owned by the public. They determined that for the constitutional provision. But in Gerke, the public schoolhouse exemption wasn't as a public schoolhouse. It was as an institution of purely public charity. It's a difficult case to follow, but the school exemption in that actually flowed from the institutions of purely public charity branch of the Constitution. And then once you get to the statutory implementation of the constitutional authority, this court in 1874 said, for a public determination, it's the use of the property, not the ownership. And that is a key distinction in Gerke.
Gerke did involve property that was both owned and operated by the same entity. It wasn't a lease situation.
I think that's right.
Okay.
Any further questions, Your Honors?
Thank you, Mr. Collins.
Thank you for your time.
Mr. Hubbard, you have a bit more than 5 minutes.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
And if you could please respond to the public policy argument that Mr. Collins presented.
Well, absolutely, Chief Justice. I think some of the observations the court itself has made are directly on point. It's very clear that the legal incidence of the tax is imposed on the owner of the property. And that's why when there's another exemption for public property used exclusively for public purposes, and public property, again, this court has long recognized, means property owned by the state or political subdivision of the state.
Do you agree that?
And so, therefore, under the public property used exclusively for public purposes, if the state or political subdivision is leasing from a private entity, it doesn't qualify for that exemption. And the reason for that is because the benefit is inuring to the private for-profit owner, commercial owner.
and it's the owner. Let's suppose that the charter school defaults on its obligation contractually to pay. Who gets the benefit of that? Well, it's the private owner. Let's suppose, and what happened in this case, it was leased for a few years, and then the tenant left, and they leased it to someone else, and they held it out for sale for a profit. Who gets that profit? The private entity does. It doesn't go back to the school. Whereas school-owned prop, when the state owns the property and the use, it's very clear that they're benefiting from the exemption. So you're taking from one political unit that's paying the tax and giving it back again. That's the rationale for the public property exemption. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Do you agree that if we rule in your favor that this will also affect the church use?
Well, not necessarily, Your Honor, because, as I said, this is
principles,
a public property exemption. So that
principle is the same. The principle is that the owner is making the profit, and it doesn't really matter your theory who they lease it to.
If I may, it's not required under the House of Public Worship exemption that the property be owned by the state or a political subdivision of the state. Basically, I'm not aware of any churches that are owned by commercial real estate entities and then are being leased. But to that extent, you could say they'll not lease
but
or without
the cases
use
that were,
profit.
The BTA cases that were cited were exactly that.
Well, those cases actually, it's very questionable in those cases whether there was any profit in the lease. I mean, we didn't have the situation that we have here where there was a very substantial
profit.
Whether
there was profit in a lease or not, the owners were private
owners.
But more
fundamentally, Your Honor, it's really based upon the board's disregard of the plain meaning of the statute. It's very recent. And as I said, I also want to focus on a few other things. The public colleges exemption, which was addressed in Dennis and Cleveland State, is a fundamentally different kind of exemption. And this court has so said. They said the public colleges exemption is an exemption for institutions. And so it reads as follows. Real property exemption for public colleges, all buildings connected therewith, and the land connected therewith, not least for the view to profit. So the phrase public colleges has been interpreted to mean the institution, not the buildings. And so then the question becomes, what does the phrase not used with a view to profit mean? Does it modify the public colleges? No, that doesn't make any sense. You don't lease a public institution. So then the question became, does it apply to the next phrase? It says public colleges, all buildings thereon, and the land therewith, not used with a view to profit. What this court said is the not used with a view to profit modifies not the second phrase. It clearly doesn't modify the first. It just modifies the last. Whereas you look at this exemption, and it's for public schoolhouses, which are a form of public property. This court so held in Watterson, and it's so held in all the
Collins distinguishes, though. He says 570907 is a use exemption, not an ownership exemption. You haven't addressed that issue.
Actually, Your Honor, and I apologize for that, there are actually several subcategories within 5739.01A. There's A1, A2, A3, A4. At one point, the first three were lumped together, the public schoolhouses, the House of Public Worship, and there was a third one. And then the fourth one, which was separate, was for public colleges. It was separate. And what this court said in Denison, that's an entirely different exemption that's based on the status of the property as an institution, and distinguished it and said it was a broader exemption that had no public ownership requirement. At least in the limited situation that you other justices pointed out, that the land was still owned by the university and there was temporary housing on it. So it was a very limited decision even in that sense.
Do you maintain that 570907 is a use exemption or an ownership exemption?
It's an ownership exemption and a use exemption. In other words, it has to be public property, and that means it has to be owned by the state or political subdivision. And I'd like to point out that, and we cited this in our brief, under the education title of the revised code, specifically in Chapter 33, 13.37 through 375, the authority is given for the public schools, and that includes the charter schools and the traditional school board run schools, that they can lease property from other owners. And in fact, it's a very common device, because a lot of school districts don't have the money to pass a levy, but they have the operating funds to pay rent. So, and the exemption is limited to only the property that is owned by the school, you know, the political subdivision. And charter schools are political subdivisions, as this court has recognized.
Mr. Hubbard, you had started out by talking about exemptions being very narrowly construed.
Yes, Your Honor.
And when we look at A1, that's the one we're talking about.
Yes.
Only. So when we're talking about public houses of worship, you talk about A3, which is really not implicated by this case.
Absolutely. There's no reason whatsoever to go down that road, particularly since this is a public property exemption. This court is so held in the Watterson versus Hallady case, and in actually in earlier cases that we review,
but one,
quietly said that.
One thing that confused me when you said that the first three at one point were lumped together, and that's my question. These earlier cases that we have to look at as precedent, were they putting all of these things
no.
in one category?
No, they were still separate exemptions,
right,
where the modification was public schoolhouses, houses of public worship, and a separate one for public colleges.
Okay.
And so, in other words, the strict construction and looking at each individual phrase separately with its own exemption criteria is a long-established practice of this court. And you would simply be following precedent, quite to the contrary, where they suggest that this would overturn established precedent. They're talking of a performing arts case that decided in 2002 by the board, and this court vacated. That has no authority whatsoever. And, of course, it was not informed by this court's controlling law in Watterson versus Halliday and Gerke. And it doesn't make any sense that the public schools that are owned by the boards of education wouldn't get the exemption. That's clear they wouldn't if they're leasing from a for-profit entity. So why should the charter schools? It makes no sense whatsoever.
Thank you, Mr. Hubbard.
Court will take a break at this time. All right.